Okay, it's Berlin Briefing Time. I'm Richard Walker, and today we're going to get you fully briefed on the man who says he can snap Germany out of its current political and economic malaise. His name is Friedrich Merz from the conservative CDU party, and he's the front runner to be Germany's next leader. There is a lot at stake. Many are warning that if the next government fails to turn things around, the far right could win the next election in 2029. So there's a lot of pressure on this man to deliver. To talk about this, I'm here with DW's Michaela Kufner, who covers Friedrich Merz and his party closely. And we're joined by the writer John Kampfner, who's written prolifically about German and European politics and society for many years. So it's great to have you both with us. Now, first of all, we're going to talk about Friedrich Merz, what kind of a person he is, his long-running feud with Angela Merkel, and find out about his powerful conservative party. Then we'll talk about what his plans are and how he wants to turn Germany around. And finally, we'll look ahead to the upcoming election and work out some scenarios for what kind of government could emerge. So, right, let's get started and let's kick off with just a quick soundbite from Friedrich Merz himself to try to get a feel for the guy. He was speaking just recently about the election in Davos. Let's take a listen.
We are leading the opinion polls, far ahead of all the others, and we are convinced that we will win and that we will then form a new government in Germany. And this is extremely necessary for our country to have a new government and new economic policy and so on. So you are seeing me very, very happy and very, very optimistic.
I mean, it's quite something, yeah? Sounding pretty confident. Michaela, let's start with you. How did he get to this moment? Why all of this confidence?
Well, I mean, to be fair, he was asked about his predictions and which coalitions he would go into. And this whole conversation started with the question to him, so what will you do in your first 100 days? This man isn't even elected. There are elections on the 23rd of February. But the polling, if the polling is anything to go by, always with a pinch of salt, the conservative CDU-CSU bloc is round about 30%, dipping above that, actually, at the moment.
And CDU-CSU... Everyone, we'll get to what that means in just a minute, but this kind of conservative alliance that he leads.
Essentially, the party bloc that would propel him to power. Yeah. They would need a coalition partner, that's for sure. Yeah. And if the polling is anything to go by, the party of the current Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, would become a potential partner. The Greens could become a potential partner. The second largest party, though, is the far-right alternative for Germany, with no chance of coming to power because nobody else wants to go into a coalition with him. But here, he was showing off that confidence that he is known for and that he's worked for, actually, for quite a few years now.
OK, so we'll get to all of those potential coalition combinations like at the back end of the podcast, but confidence this man is exuding. Let's go to John. Tell us a little bit about his background. He's been in politics for a long time, although he then dipped out of politics. But it all began in the European Parliament, right?
That's right. I mean, it must be said, I mean, that language that Friedrich Merz was using was to Davos. And Davos man and Davos woman requires an element of bravado about him. But Friedrich Merz, and I think it is when rather than if he comes to power as Germany's chancellor, he is going to be very different. It's going to be a cold shower for Germany, and I think a necessary cold shower as well. He's a man who, as you say, he's been in politics for a long time. He's acerbic. He doesn't suffer fools gladly. He's capable of being quite rude to people. He knows his mind. He, both because of his relationship to Angela Merkel and feeling that she had stabbed him in the front and the back, is very keen to do the same now to her during this election campaign and afterwards. He has committed what for some traditional Germans think is a cardinal sin and worked in the private sector for the asset company BlackRock and sort of a big global company, which in the sort of millennial feeling of Germany's center-left is regarded as beyond the pale. And in some ways, this is the circumstances, and the circumstances of Trump, and we will come to all of that, are moving in his direction. The key task for Merz between now and polling day is not to fall on a banana skin, because he is capable of saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. And that's what his advisors are very closely watching. If he doesn't do that, he should be a shoo-in for Chancellor.
Yeah, so maybe a kind of biggest risk to him ahead is potentially overconfidence. Yeah, so he's a guy who's he's kind of late in his career. He's come back to politics after having had this early, pretty breakneck career in this Conservative Party. Then he became a rival of Angela Merkel. Then he famously kind of lost this rivalry, but then he came back to the party to win the crown again, right? I mean, Michaela, tell us a little bit about that feud with Angela Merkel.
Well, essentially, he left politics frustrated in 2007 over having lost to Angela Merkel in a power contest in the Conservative CDU-CSU, and he never really got over it. And whenever you ask him about it, he simply protests way too much. Two new biographies have just come out, and there's one colleague actually telling the story in there that he just bumped into him on the street, and just between the traffic light, turning from right to green, he said, "What Angela Merkel's doing again is unbelievable," when she was in power. So it came out of nothing, and he wants to prove quite clearly that he was right all along in his take on Germany, and particularly where the Conservative CDU-CSU should be. To his sentiment, and there actually is a significant bloc within the Conservative CDU party, Angela Merkel took the party way too far into the centre ground, leaning towards the left. He feels he's now rectified this, and it actually shows in policy, in his tough stance on migration, in his business-oriented speak as well, not just in Davos, but of course particularly there, because it is a sales pitch for Germany when he's in Davos, that he wants to propel his party, but also Germany, into a post-Merkel era. Interestingly enough, he's only 1 year younger than Angela Merkel. He's 69, Angela Merkel is 70. So that's what a new departure looks like in Germany.
All right. And John, so CDU-CSU, we've heard this over and over again now. This is the conservative bloc in German politics. It's the most powerful, most successful party grouping in Germany. Explain it to us.
Well, you call it conservative, Richard, but it's Merz's contention that it has been anything but that for the last 15 years. And his rivalry, to give him his due, his rivalry with Merkel is a mixture of several things. It is ego, and we've talked about that. He didn't get the top job, and he was furious with her for doing that. It was principle as well. He takes the view, and it's a perfectly legitimate view, that if you want a conservative party, you should have a conservative party, and that Angela Merkel's party was not remotely conservative. In some ways, it's the flip side of what happened in the UK under Tony Blair and Labour. People were saying, if you want a Labour Party, you want a centre-left socialist or social democratic party, and you haven't got it. So you want what it says on the tin, and his argument is that conservatives haven't had that. But the third bit is expediency, or rather necessity. And with the AfD, the Alternative for Germany, the far-right party, bearing down in second place and being an absolute threat, and we'll come to the issue around could they eventually take power. And I wrote in the Guardian only a few days ago that I think they could in 2029, alarmingly, if a particular scenario took place. His argument is that you can take away some of the votes from the AfD by espousing or by reflecting some of the concerns that are held by voters who are moving towards them on migration, on other issues as well. His detractors would say, well, actually, all you're doing is you're feeding the beast and you're playing to the gallery on this right-wing populism. But everything, I mean, if you just look at the last few days in the German media, broadcast media, social media, newspaper, print media, you might be forgiven forgetting there's a German election going on, because the entire coverage from top to bottom has been Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump is the absolute key figure in this German election and will dominate the next German government.
Yeah. OK, so let's talk about Trump in just a minute. But I just want to kind of touch on one more thing before we switch to this kind of policy areas, and just talking about Merz again. So we've heard about his feud with Merkel. We've heard about him wanting to take the conservative bloc more towards the right. Michele, you say there's also a bit of an issue that he's had sometimes with women in his party.
Well, yes, the big issue is, and he himself recognises that the CDU for success needs women voters. But the younger the women are that get polled, the worse he does. Below 18, he's even below 9%. Well, you can say that doesn't really matter because they're not going to vote anyway. The voting age in Germany is 18. But above that, it's not that terribly much more. And he just simply comes across as a man of the 90s. He's tone deaf to the issue of women's representation. Just as an example, in 2023, there were 7 tickets for the Munich Security Conference for his party. He sent 7 men. He doesn't have anyone who's a close advisor to him who's female. His spokespeople, all men. Only the head of the Konrad Adenauer House of the party, that's a female speaker. And I just attended a meeting of the upper echelons of the conservative CDU and their executive branch. They were having discussions and he was asked about women's representation. There was one reporter who asked him, look, there's only 20% women in the CDU group in parliament. What are you going to do about it? And he says, well, he tries really hard and it's going in the right direction. And it's a shame you didn't listen to the discussions in the party executive today, because the female members were having discussions where only females were speaking. And he just simply doesn't realise that that exactly is the problem, that there are some issues where only women are talking amongst themselves. So also he came late to one of his own party events, which were about women's representation. And this whole thing was webcast. And he comes 30 minutes late. So would he come late to a gathering on a business and investment? One doubts it.
So interesting. So it sounds like he's got some ground to make up with women in his party. But as we've seen with Donald Trump, you can have a very male-dominated political platform and get ahead these days in Western politics. So maybe a bit of a comparison there. So let's move on now to Friedrich Merz and his plans and his positions. And I would like both John and you, Michaela, I've asked you both to kind of bring along one issue that is important to Friedrich Merz and to his party that he wants to do, the plans and positions. So, Michaela, it picks up straight from what we're talking about, Trump here. So let's go into that. Trump and tariffs. This is the major issue, as John was just saying, facing Germany right now. What does Merz want to do about Trump and the threat of tariffs?
Well, first of all, his message in Davos, but also here when he spoke to other conservative bloc leaders of the EPP in the European Union was, don't be afraid of Trump. We need to talk to him about tariffs, that these tariffs are going to make people poorer, both sides of the Atlantic, and there simply is no point in going ahead with that. And he sees as the antidote, although he didn't use that word, to a Trump-style distortion of the market, the threat of Europe becoming poorer, essentially European strength. And that's where we quickly arrive also in the whole defense industry. He doesn't talk about security and business separately. He is very fast to then speak about the benefits of a more aligned defense industry in Europe that could make Europe richer as well.
Okay, interesting. And so we've got a soundbite from Friedrich Merz actually answering a question that you posed in a press conference. This is about an appropriate European response to Trump. Let's just listen to that.
As long as the European member states are united, they will be respected in the world, including the US. And as long as they are divided, nobody will take us serious. So this is, in my view, the last call for action.
So, John, let's come back to you. Let's get your take on that from Friedrich Merz. What's he trying to say there with that, you know, this importance of European unity in dealing with Trump?
He's making the point that anybody in any party would say that European nation states are simply, in the new or the present world order, too small to have clout, not just with the United States, but with China, and that European unity is absolutely vital. And Europe showed that to a large degree with regard to its response to the initial stages of Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And so it shows that when Europe acts together, it can work well. But I think there is a different message alongside that as well. Is it subliminal or is it open? It's a sort of message to Trump that's saying, you respect power. And Europe needs to be a power and not just a pleader and not just a laggard, both of which it has been for a lot of time. You look at the two current leaders of Europe, or self-styled leaders of Europe, President Macron and Olaf Scholz. Macron, not short of self-confidence or his own view of charisma, and has failed dismally to bring Europe along with him. And Olaf Scholz has managed over the past 4 years the singular feat of getting on with nobody in Europe and beyond, and pretty much showing a pretty limp face of Europe and of Germany around the world. So this is Merz's opportunity. It's almost like saying to Trump, hey, we are elderly, one-term macho bros who understand business. Let's cut a deal together. You can work with me. And you never know. Certainly in comparison to what else is on offer, he may be right, or at least he will be less wrong than the others. So that's really the message. And he was saying only a few hours ago at one of the many conferences and speech opportunities that they're all having at the moment in the election campaign, he was saying, let's cut a deal with the Americans on LNG, on liquid natural gas. They want something from us. Let's give them something. So this is very much politics of the apprentice. This is politics of the deal. And he's sending a message to Trump. That's the kind of person you want. Hey, that's the kind of person you're going to get and Europe's going to get. Now, whether that washes with Trump, who has a particular or has had a particular disdain for Germany, we shall see. And whether Merz can bring his coalition, and we haven't discussed which coalition parties he will bring with him, and whether he can bring Europe along with him is another matter. But that's certainly the message he is trying to give. It's a much more hard knuckle. And Michaela was talking about women's representation, and he's going to really struggle to get very many women in his cabinet and whatever. But it's also, I think, he's almost the time, if it was ever going to be, for this sort of deficit is now, because it's the kind of thing that Trump will say, hey, I don't really care about that. Yeah. And it's arguable whether some voters in Germany would say, yeah, this is pretty undesirable. But, you know, it's an undesirable time. Let's not go for sort of the principles that have guided us over the last 20 years. Let's just go for a pretty uncompromising macho approach to politics, because that's the only game in town.
Well, John, I just want to respond to one thing there. First of all, the whole idea of him having a bro approach, I could spend the rest of this just giggling through it, because it's a concept that, I mean, they may be handing out energy drinks with his name on, but he's never going to fit that bill. Also, he said he won't even try and have parity in his next cabinet. Has no interest. Yeah. And he cites the example of Christine Lambrecht, the disgraced former defense minister, as, look, it's not doing women a favor either. So that's another thing. He instantly assumes that women would only be there, would be the incompetent part of a cabinet. But just leaving that behind, that whole idea for a second, he's a businessman and he is very much focusing right now. And you can tell that he's walking a very fine line between communicating that, yes, there is room to enter negotiations with Trump, but he doesn't drop his guard, because he fears that the price will be driven up if he's too transparent about which subject areas that could be. And yes, it could be energy imports, but he's also said in just his very fresh speech on foreign policy that he wants to revisit the whole idea of TTIP, of having a transatlantic trade deal with the United States, which spectacularly failed. Interestingly enough, that's an idea that was floated by the woman who was the immediate successor of Angela Merkel, Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer, already.
Okay, so let's trot through a few more issues because I think we've got quite a few more to get to. So, John, give us a quick take. You wanted to talk about Friedrich Merz's approach to the economy and particularly this phenomenon in Germany called the debt brake, this kind of shibboleth in German politics that prevents governments from borrowing a lot of money for investment. John, give us a readout on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody is talking about Germany's infrastructure crisis, and Germans have, at the risk of generalizing, Germans have, even in good times, Germans have a great propensity to say that everything is terrible in their own country. But anybody who travels on trains or deals with any other kind of German infrastructure at the moment that is absurdly analog, as well as anything else, you still get letters in the post from public authorities, the kind of thing that was dispensed with. You sometimes think you're living in the 19th century when it comes to dealing with German officialdom. That's the kind of thing that he is pledging to dispense with, but leaders do that kind of thing, whether they achieve it or not. This outgoing three-party traffic light coalition, right at the top of its original agreement, which came only a couple of months before Putin's invasion of Ukraine, was digitization. We're going to digitize the whole country. And they've done almost nothing in the 4 years in that regard. So that's one area. And the debt brake is this, in my view, absurd a provision that was then entered into the Constitution amid the panic that followed the financial crash and the southern states, Greece and others, and Germany's idea that you cannot spend more than you have, and to keep the public borrowing to a bare minimum. That was then not just passed as an act of parliament, but enshrined in the Constitution. Now, that requires a two-thirds majority to remove. Merz was particularly, in the way that particularly conservative administrations in the past have been averse to public spending, has been reluctant to do this. I'm told he has been persuaded to introduce one of two types of reforms to this debt brake or this black zero. One is a full constitutional change to it that would allow for greater public spending on issues of critical interest to the country. That could be defense or that could be critical infrastructure. The other is to produce temporary provisions, such as the one that was introduced when Olaf Scholz announced defense spending resulting from Putin's invasion of Ukraine in his famous Zeitenwende speech. And that would be time-limited and temporary, and governments would have to go back to parliament to enact further changes. And so there's very much an expectation or a hope, depending on the kind of coalition he agrees, that he would change the, he would seek to change the constitution to introduce an amendment, do this. As I say, that wouldn't just be for public spending across the board, but it would be for areas that would be deemed to be critical.
But he wouldn't have a majority for it. And that's the whole pitch that we're hearing from the still remaining parties of the government coalition, that ahead of these elections, together with the Conservative, with Friedrich Merz's bloc, they would still be able to fix this and reform the debt brake. Friedrich Merz himself is not willing to do this before the elections. And afterwards, I believe that the potentially more likely scenario is that they will declare some kind of emergency over Ukraine or something else to be able to take on extra debt. They might just be missing the boat on actually reforming that very debt brake.
Okay, that is the absolute moot point on this. And if I think it's an absolute bare minimum that they will do something more on military assistance to Ukraine, although, of course, everything will be contingent on what Putin, Zelensky and Trump discuss and whether or not a deal is made. But it's very much a sense, and I'm also told that there will be planning reform proposals as well. Merz doesn't have much time, and in any country you see a time lag between legislation for economic reform and people seeing the effects of that economic reform. He's only got 4 years to show a material difference to Germany's ailing infrastructure, and he knows that.
Okay, let's keep moving forward. So I've also brought along a couple of points. I think one thing that I would like to touch on is Merz's approach to China and Russia. As John was just saying there, so with respect to Ukraine, generally the CDU has been pretty hawkish compared to the Social Democrats. So we can expect the CDU to want to keep up support to Ukraine. Friedrich Merz has even dangled the possibility of providing Ukraine with cruise missiles, which has been a long debate within Germany in recent months. But I think particularly interesting, what I would like to pick up from this speech that he made on foreign policy was talking, lumping China and Russia very firmly together in what he described as an axis of autocracies. This kind of language is being used in the US quite a lot. And taking a very broad view of this term of de-risking that a lot of Western countries have used as a kind of bag, gather-all term for an approach towards China, that you need to reduce the risk in the relationship between Western countries and China. And taking a broader view of that than I think Olaf Scholz, the current German chancellor, would take. Olaf Scholz very much emphasizes that Germany needs to cut its dependence on particular raw materials coming from China, rare earths, things like that, that are important for the tech center. Whereas Friedrich Merz was talking about the risks of investing in China. So a lot of very big German companies have invested a lot of money in recent years in China, even after the German government started talking about this need to de-risk. Friedrich Merz was very explicit about that in the discussion around his speech, saying, "My heartfelt request to all companies is limit the risk you take to avoid endangering your own company if it triggers an immediate write-off." An immediate write-off, what he's thinking there is presumably, what happens if China invades Taiwan and suddenly the West wants to slap the same kind of sanctions on China as it did on Russia, and suddenly all of those German factories that you have in China, you need to write them off.
Yes, and there's one bit that he follows on further. He basically tells companies, you can take that risk, but consider it carefully and don't come running to the government. Yeah, that's basically what he's saying. Bailout. So all those car makers who have their production in China and who are currently making most of their profits already abroad, to a large part in China, have been warned by what he has told them. And this is a very geostrategic view, but again, focusing in on the very business fallout, and clearly also a signal that, particularly to the car industry as well, that whenever there's a crisis, there will not just be another summit at the Chancellery and those handouts that they got accustomed to during Merkel times.
Yeah, but of course, you know, we'll see what happens if these scenarios really happen.
Then
of
there's
course,
reality.
Of course,
and a coalition partner.
A Conservative government is usually, you know, wants to be close to business, and if it sees business in trouble, then it may have dilemmas to deal with. All right, let's keep moving quickly, John. You've got a biggie, climate. Tell us in a nutshell, what is Friedrich Merz's approach to climate?
Well, his rhetoric on climate is, it is, or at least the red-green, the Social Democrat green element of the traffic light, put climate concerns over economic growth concerns. And that's pretty much now a standard approach in different countries. And of course, Trump has been ripping up at a rate of knots anything and everything that Biden has been doing to promote renewable energy, the Inflation Reduction Act with all its many changes that were contained in that. That is now regarded in this sort of zero-sum mentality that green issues are deleterious to economic growth. And I was just noticing, just introducing very briefly a UK element to this. The British government, the supposedly centre-left government of Keir Starmer, has just been saying, we're going to expand two or three airports because that's the key to growth. That's a very un-green approach, but that appears to be the prevailing mood in so much. And Merz is looking at wind power. He's already said, and others would agree with him, that Merkel's panicky response to the Fukushima nuclear disaster a decade ago and in hastening the closing of the remaining German nuclear power stations was the wrong thing, although he's not going to be opening them up as well. But he's going to be looking at all elements, I would assume, of subsidies for renewable energy. He's been talking about how he would build 50 gas-fired plants because wind energy is actually producing less than had been predicted, and the over-reliance in his view of solar and wind is vulnerable. But I mean, at the heart of all of this is an absolute psychological retreat from this idea it was almost Germany's selling card under Angela Merkel that, Germany was the green country. I think we're moving a long way from that.
Yeah.
Well, he's basically saying that he's still committed to going green. He just says that the targets are too tough and that having a solid economy, and Germany is now heading ever deeper into recession with 2 years of negative growth. He says a successful economy is the basis for everything. So basically he's reprioritizing and saying business first, then we can talk climate, but it's not completely off the table. And I think that's where a huge difference is, of course, to the United States.
And of course, climate change has become a kind of a culture war issue. So I think he's probably trying to diffuse support for the far right there, which has made it very much a kind of a culture war issue. Another culture war issue, obviously, migration. Michaela, you wanted to bring that one up. Tell us about migration in just a couple of minutes.
Yes, migration is the one issue where he's been talking remarkably tough. Just after a knife attack in Aschaffenburg in Bavaria in Germany, where a child and a man were killed by an Afghan asylum seeker, he actually came out with a statement saying, I want permanent border controls. I want people to be turned back at the border. I want the federal police to be able to issue arrest warrants, ask for arrest warrants. So he goes beyond what he demanded beforehand. At the same time, he also says, in a different scenario, I want fast-track immigration for workers, much-needed skilled workers here in Germany. So he's sounding very tough on illegal migration. At the same time, he wants fast-track qualified migration, again, to help German business.
Okay, so just one last policy point that I would like to bring in here, and this is Friedrich Merz's view of Germany's kind of place in the world. There was a very interesting quote that he made in this foreign policy speech, speaking in German, and the importance of Germany sort of ramping up its strategic capacity he was talking about. So let's hear that in German, and then I'll translate it into English afterwards, and I'll get your takes.
Strategiefähigkeit heißt für mich, dass wir in den wesentlichen außen- und sicherheitspolitischen Dossiers endlich zu einer gestaltenden Politik kommen müssen. Dass wir von einer schlafenden Mittelmacht zu einer führenden Mittelmacht werden.
So there, Merz, he's talking about the strategic capacity of Germany, that it needs to embrace policies in the key areas of foreign and security policy, the kind of shape event, that we need to go from being a sleeping middle power to being a leading middle power. I thought that was an interesting quote, John. What's your take on that?
Well, if you think of the old cliche that Germany outsourced its defence to America, it outsourced its energy to Russia, and it outsourced its trade to China. The last link on that chain we were talking a few minutes ago, which is Merz saying to German business, be it on your head if you're going to invest in China. I'm not going to be there to bail you out. Energy, Germany is largely divested from Russia. And the absolute key point is now, which is Trump's point, but it is Mark Rutte's point now, the NATO General Secretary General and others, to the point of the Baltics, the Nordics and the Poles, is when is Germany going to step up on defence? And it's moved quite some way from the place it was in, and it's now making 2%, which was the NATO target set a decade or two ago. And it's finally got there. And a lot of European countries, by the way, still are nowhere there. And Giorgia Meloni's Italy, which is fated by Trump as the sort of Giorgia Meloni's his great sort of one of his European hopefuls, are miles away from that. But Germany is Germany, and there are huge expectations on Germany. The question for Merz, I think the absolute key question in terms of Germany's credibility with the Trump administration, and to a degree also with Russia and with China, is how much is it going to spend on defense? Now, Merz has been coy on this. Germany is now 2%. As I say, Trump has been throwing out this 5% target, which would just be extraordinary. Germany wouldn't be able to afford that. But, you know, can it get to 2.5, 3, 3.5 over time? That would be economically seismic in terms of cost, either a massive growth in the economy. And as Michaela's already saying, it's 2 years in the doldrums in recession, and it's not looking great for 25 and into 26. So where are they going to get the money from? Where would they cut from with ailing infrastructure? These are the absolute questions for Merz. And that really lies, you can talk all the time about, are you a big power? Are you a middle power? Are you a vigorous active power? Are you a passive power? A lot of it is ultimately determined by, are you an economically strong power? And beyond the rhetoric, that's going to be the key target, the key test for Metz.
I think, I mean, from conversations I had in Washington while I was there for the election, I think it's going to be hard for Germany in terms of its relationship with the US if it cannot communicate to the US that it's at least on track to match the US in terms of defense spending. The US is at 3%, and the US is thinking, why should we spend more than you? Michaela, your thoughts, how far can they go in 30 seconds? Then we'll move to predictions.
The question is always of 3% of what exactly? And that's the point he's making. And also, these expectations, something that the Merz team is very much aware of. The latest attempt just after that foreign policy to nail him down on percentage points failed. His response is, we need to get the defense industry in Europe aligned. That's what he wants to ensure. And he wants to get more defense for the money that Europe is currently spending. And that will require overcoming seemingly insurmountable differences with France in their own vested interests. And he stresses time and time again how often he speaks to Emmanuel Macron. So basically, he's saying he can make some headway where he alleges that Olaf Scholz didn't even try, which isn't true.
Well, we shall see. But certainly, if like any number that is below America's number will be tough with the Trump administration. That's my prediction. OK, let's get to scenarios for after the election. So I think we're all agreed that the CDU-CSU is very likely to be in top position. Michaela, you said around 30%, maybe a little bit above, a little below, but that still means you need a coalition, as John was saying earlier, talking about the importance of coalitions. Friedrich Merz has completely ruled out working with the AfD, the right-wing populist party. So let's talk about some options. Like, he could either do a coalition with the Social Democrats or a coalition with the Greens. What would be the difference between those two options, Michaela? And then we'll go to John.
Well, first of all, it depends on who is stronger. He has actually said he hopes he can do a coalition with only two parties. That's what he's fighting for at the moment.
So meaning his party plus one other.
Yeah, his Conservative Union and one other partner. And there's a neck and neck race between the Social Democrats, who are the party of the current Chancellor Olaf Scholz, and the Greens, always around the 13, 14, 15% mark. We'll see where they end in the end. And the hope is that he can have a coalition with just one other party. On foreign policy, I think it's quite easy to say it would be easier to be in a coalition with the Greens. Also, on his call for being a lot tougher in relation to Ukraine, boosting Ukraine a lot more. And that's something where Olaf Scholz has made it his political trademark of the Social Democrats to avoid getting, as he said, dragged into the war, and where he is really putting his foot down not to spend more before the elections on Ukraine. There's a fight going on at the moment. So policy-wise, the Greens would be easier in major points. At the same time, his own Bavarian sister parties doesn't want to work with the Greens. So whatever happens on election day, it's going to be very uncertain who they go into a coalition with, unless the votes, the actual results, are a lot clearer than the polling we're seeing right now.
OK, and John, I mean, there's another scenario that does not work out for Merz, and the result is so fragmented that you need to have a three-way coalition coming out of this election with Merz's Conservatives plus the Social Democrats and the Greens. One very senior minister said to me in the background that was a nightmare scenario. What's your take on that, and why would that be problematic to have three parties in a coalition?
I wrote just about exactly about this in a piece for The Guardian earlier this week, looking at the Austrian experience where the three parties, having pledged to keep out the far-right populists, failed to do so. And now the far-right populists in Austria are on the cusp of taking power, leading in government for the first time since the Second World War. Now, minds are concentrated enough in Germany for that not to happen. I think the chances of that happening in 2025 are minuscule, partly because Austria has just shown them what could happen if you bicker and your coalition discussions fail on the narcissism of small difference. Yet, here is the scenario, Richard, just as you've alluded to. You have, and one can get very technical about smaller parties, the liberal parties and the far-left party and the left meets right populist party, and whether they get the 5% that is required to enter parliament. But just leaving that aside for 1 minute, let's assume none of those small parties get in, or at least the Liberals do not get in. You could have a situation in Germany in which the only three mainstream democratic post-war parties, the CDU Conservatives, the SPD Social Democrats, and the Greens, are all forced to be in government together. The only opposition is provided by the extremists, the AfD, and possibly this, as I say, this far-right, far-left group called BSW. You look at other countries, and you look at social media, and you look at the propensity for the public and for voters to give governments only one term in office. So then you have the nightmare scenario heading into 28, 29, and the next general election. Merz, for all the reasons we've been talking about, is struggling to show that he's really turbocharged Germany's economy and sorted out a lot of its problems in those 3 or 4 years, because it takes a long time to sort out systemic problems in any country. You have a public mood that is angry and surly, some of it prompted by Donald Trump and Elon Musk and others, Viktor Orban, who knows who else. And you could be staring at the possibility, and it's a nightmare vision for most right-minded people, of the AfD emerging as the leading party in Germany in 28, 29. Now, a lot of things have to happen for that scenario to take place. But I've had so many conversations with people who absolutely don't rule it out, which is why these elections and the coalition formation and the performance of the next coalition are absolutely crucial.
So that makes it as clear as it could be why Friedrich Merz is under so much pressure now to deliver in this election campaign, and if he does make it into government, to deliver when he is in government. Thank you so much, John Kampfner and Michaela Kufner, for that excellent canter through the personality, the politics of Friedrich Merz and the political situation here in Germany. That wraps up this edition of Berlin Briefing. Thank you very much for listening to Berlin Briefing. If you've been on any podcast provider, or for watching if you've been on YouTube, do leave us a comment on YouTube and do check out the notes there. We'll put in some links for some background on what we've been talking about. And also do check out DW's weekly newsletter, Berlin Briefing, which is a great run through of goings on in Germany that comes out to your inbox every single week. But for now, thanks for being with us, and see you next time.